everybody, it's time for another Shop Talk show. This is episode number 207. It's going to be a rapid fire show. That means the sound of just me and Dave doing no guests, no drama, no news. We're just going to do as many questions and answers as you can possibly handle in one episode. Thanks so much for sending in your questions. It's always very interesting. Provides the very fodder, the foundation on which Shop Talk Show is built. We're going to get right into them, but we have two sponsors to mention first, including a brand new one, which provides an absolutely vital service to any web application error tracking. You have to do it. Rollbar does an amazing job of it. It's at rollbar.com. One of my favorite things is that you can just use it. They just have a live demo of the app. So if you want to see what it's like to use, you can just go there and just open the app and use it. It's pretty vital, you know, like if your app throws a 500 error of some kind, do you know that that happened to that user? Did you like write some weird code to have it just like email that to yourself or something, as we've all done?
Could it use that?
Of course, it's vital to know that and how often it's happening and have some ability to talk about it and close bugs and deal with it so your app is so the errors are being handled properly on your app. And that's what Rollbar is. Definitely check out rollbar.com. And Media Temple, the web host that has been hosting Shop Talk Show since the beginning. We're here to tell you about their most affordable plan, which is their most innovative, interesting, awesome plan, I think, is their grid service. It starts at $30 a month, so it's pretty affordable, but what you get for it is pretty darn impressive. So it is now, all of a sudden, and a major upgrade to it, all SSD storage. And I'll tell you, I switched to all SSD at CSS Tricks, also on Media Temple. You can really feel the difference of an all SSD hard drive host. Just absolutely love it. You get 30-day automatic backups. You get one click to install all kinds of popular applications. You're automatically on a CDN when you're on the grid. And a file manager, which is really quite cool. You can manage all the files of your website right through their website. We'll tell you more about that later in the show, but for now, let's kick things off, Mr. Dave.
Shopping Maniacs, you're listening to another episode of Shop Talk Show. Chris, how are you doing today?
I am doing really good. I always love doing a nice little rapid fire thingy where we just get to, get into it here. So we have one that came in from Mr. Big Bass Roller. That seems like an appropriate song.
Yeah.
It was audio, and we always, of course, love it when you send in audio questions, but there's a little quality issue on this one, so let's just read it instead. I'll go ahead and take this first one. What should a web developer do when handed a prototype that's already been built in HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, for example, handed a prototype that was done in Webflow, or a custom site builder like Metalsmith, and we'll put some links to those in the show notes, but those things spit out HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. So what's a front-end developer do is tasked with, you know, making this thing into, quote-unquote, the real finished website, I guess. Should I use the prototype as much as possible as to not repeat any unnecessary work, or redo the HTML, CSS, JavaScript by hand so that it is perfect? I am on my second project that is involving this situation, and I think it's starting to be a trend. I'm leaning towards redoing it by hand, but I don't know how my client will feel about having to pay extra. Extra meaning it's going to take them time to redo this work that's kind of quote unquote already done. Yeah, because to them, it already looks done. So what do you think, Dave? Seems maybe like a talk it out kind of.
I'll start with the answer. I think the answer is talk it out. I think you're going to have to discuss with whoever you're getting the prototypes from, and figure out kind of what the intent of that prototype was. I'm probably in the situation where I am the prototype handoffer person, mm-hmm. like handing off Jekyll sites.
You're Webflow in this.
I'm Webflow in this scenario. So I empathize, but I think, you know, it, I think what when you hand something off, it's kind of a complete thought usually. And, you know, I think every web developer is like, oh, I'm just going to this is not perfect enough. I'm going to fix it because it's not the way I do it. And I think that's, you know, can be fine if it's like bad code that you can't use or maintain. But I think it's important to not lose the nuance. You know, somebody working in Webflow probably spent a week trying to get some animation pop-up, you know, fly-in thing to work just right. And if you like go through and bulldoze that, you're probably creating more problems, you know. So I think like having a conversation about the intent, like how, what, you know, what level of baked is this? Do you want me just to integrate this, or do you want me to kind of clean it up and fix it and make it more performant?
And it's not to say that the code that was produced by those things is bad, but it might be like it probably codes however it codes, which might be different than how you code. In fact, it probably is for sure. So you're probably not 100% comfortable with the code that it produces, even if it's like, you know, empirically somehow excellent code. I mean, you know, we've talked about this before, Dave. I mean, even you and I, who have done all these different podcasts together and have worked on projects together and stuff, code very, very differently from each other. And it's just the way it is. And of course, you're going to code differently than a machine. So it might be worth you rebuilding just so that you feel intimately comfortable with the code that it's produced. You know, a big topic these days is style guides and things like that. It's almost certainly that, you know, code auto-generated from some service isn't probably coded such like with patterns in mind, or maybe it is a little bit, but it's not quite like, oh, I see what you're trying to do here. This is a component that's meant to work anywhere under any circumstances. It's probably not coded like that. It seems like a human being kind of thing to do. So maybe that's a way that you could approach a conversation is, oh, great, this prototype looks great. It's just what I need, but why don't you let me take it, digest it, put it into the context of the you know, the more complete site. I can style guide it out, something like that. But, or maybe they don't want that at all. Maybe it's a one-page site and it's kind of ready to go, and they hired you to press the deploy button because they don't know how to do that or something. So as Dave said, it's a talky situation.
Yeah, I mean, there's, they built that for a reason. So trying to figure out what the intent was, I think that's very important. It is always kind of a rough situation to inherit kind of a pile of code, and you're like, how does this work? You know? I think there's, but you know, they may be way more interested in just launching it, you know? So you kind of have to just figure that out, I think.
Sure. There's something to be said for just ship it.
David Sawyer writes in, at my work, we have an administration site that only our team uses daily. It's a pretty traditional site in that each page a user navigates to require a full page load. Many of our pages have several hundred lines of JavaScript that is run in them. This code, JS code, is completely unique for each page. The way we've been including our JS is on each page is simply by dropping the code in a script block in each page's head. This approach definitely gets the job done, but it feels a little yucky at the same time. Do you know of a better way to handle the distribution of our JS for this website?
There's a lot of interesting bits in here. One of them is that it's already getting the job done. So that feels like, okay, cool. Another thing is that it's an internal site. So it's kind of like, it's not that all the rules don't matter, but they don't in a bigger way. You know, it's like, it's not that big of a deal. I wouldn't like juice the performance of an internal site. Like, I wouldn't be as excited about that. Like, oh, I got 20 milliseconds back on the rendering of this on my site that 8 people use.
This internal admin tool is 60 FPS. Bro.
Smoking. And then there's this bit about the several hundred lines of unique JavaScript on every single page. Like, how unique is it? I kind of feel like, what could possibly be so unique on every single page? Is it just because the different page has different functionality? But for Dave and Chris and Susan and Jane, they're all, it's still the same JavaScript on, like, you know, page2.js or whatever. Or I have a feeling that it's like a configuration of that JavaScript that's different. It's like you need to load their username, you need to load their ID and stuff, and that's what's unique. So maybe there's this block of JavaScript that isn't unique that just digests some configuration and then runs. So I don't think it's that big of a deal to drop a script block on a page that is configuration. I think that's pretty standard procedure.
Yeah, that's sort of what it, I think there's kind of, you know, if you're doing this on, let's say it's like, even just like three pages that have a very similar set of JavaScript, that's, you know, it's going to be very similar. So it seems like you have like a configuration thing, like maybe you're swapping images or something, or usernames or company IDs or something. So I think you could make an abstraction of all that code, and maybe I think the kind of pro move is you just send like only the variables from the server down that you need. Chris, you had a analytics post that kind of you're like sending some variables out to analytics. I think that's kind of the best way to do it. And then it's just kind of like a method that fires, you know.
Right. So if it's config that's different, that's a way to do it. It seems like you're loading it in the head. That seems unusual to me. Like the use cases for loading scripts in the head are pretty few and far between these days. So maybe just dropping that in the footer would be kind of at least a little boost. Maybe you're just looking for a little win and that will make you feel better about this website. But it doesn't sound like it's that bad of a situation. Although maybe it's 100% of your job at this company is to work on this administration site. So maybe you are very interested in making it as awesome as it can be. So nothing against that, of course. Do what you got to do. Seems like, if the JavaScript is truly, it needs to be 100% unique on every single page for every single user, then having the server generate it and dropping into a script block, not the worst thing in the world. So Juanita Hiscock writes in, I'm a novice web designer. I have a site where I've made many changes and additions. I want to start fresh because I no longer know what IDs, classes, scripts, etc. are used and what are not used. What is the best way to start fresh? Thanks from sunny Canada. Thanks for writing in, Juanita. It's always nice to hear from beginners in this industry. I can feel you, and I don't know that you'll ever totally not have that feeling of, I think a lot of us out there are really strive to have a very complete understanding of what absolutely everything on our website is doing, because that's how we make good choices about the website. But the longer a site is around and the more people that work on it and the bigger, quote unquote, it gets, the harder that becomes to know what every single thing does. So I think you're in a fun position, and you're in like the ultimate beginner position of really starting to level up, is that you're like, I don't know what all this stuff does, so can I get rid of it? Maybe I'll just try getting rid of it and seeing what happens. And so what's the best way to start fresh? Why literally starting fresh? Burn it down, build it up.
Burn down. I remember being in this position. I think it was like 2006 or 7, after I read Web Designing with Web Standards by Zeldman. And it was just like, oh, all this stuff like means things and it has purpose. And you start in podcast gods, forgive me, I'm going to use a Matrix analogy here. But, when Neo sees the code and he like finally understands what it is, that's sort of like what I think. That was sort of the moment. You're just like, oh, okay, this like means something. Or like all that jQuery I just like copy pasted from Stack Overflow, I don't need it. Like I'm actually in this position right now with my blog, like for like past 4 days or something. I've been up at night like, hey, I send jQuery with every page. I'm not using any JavaScript. Why do I have it? And so I'm just sitting there like, what am I even using JavaScript? I'm sure like some page on some corner of my website, like daverupert.com, has JavaScript or is leveraging it in the cloud. But I'm just like, I don't think I'm using it like anywhere. So why am I sending it with every page load? So So that's kind of...
And that's Dave, who's, you know, a performance-concerned person working on his own blog where he should have 100% understanding of what's going on. It happens to me sometimes, too. I'm like, what? I will be like, it's time to do a little performance sprint on the old site here. Like, what the heck is this file now? Oh, yeah, I remember this. Kind of remember. I don't really know exactly what it does, but there's that. Like, what is this emoji.js? I did not load emoji.js. What will happen if I delete it, you know? Or but that's, I mean, that seems pretty clear. Like, it does something emoji related. I can probably delete it knowing that I don't really care about emojis on this website or in what way some third party thinks I should. But there's other things, you know, like, can you get rid of like admin or like panel.css or something? Like, sometimes it's hard to know what that is. Or you look in there and you can see the classes. You're not sure what those classes do. So you're in a moment where you're learning about your own website. And there's like nothing more level up-y about front end than the moment that you're in right now, Juanita. So just you kind of enjoy. Ultimately, your question was, what is the best way to start fresh? I'd say if your project is young enough, it's not mission critical enough, just start deleting stuff and kind of see what happens, see if that's okay, see if you regret it, see if you maybe move those files to somewhere else so you can see if, kind of see what breaks. And that can be a fun situation. I remember, I think the first time I was thinking about this, I was thinking of a deep dive. So this doesn't maybe apply to you, Juanita, but it applies to some of us who think about things like, can I remove this CSS or not? And one of them is like, I want to figure out classes on my website that I can delete, or not even classes, but any selectors in the CSS that don't match anything. And there's tools that do that, right? I think you've probably seen some, Dave, that they look at a CSS file and look at a page of a website and be like, I figured it out. These are the classes that aren't being used.
Yeah, I'm just fired up Chrome's Web Inspector. They have an audits panel.
Oh, and it'll tell you that?
Run web page performance. It's like, oh, remove 113 unused CSS selectors, 50% of your CSS.
I don't know if that's very responsible of them for even to say that, because, of course, it's looking at one page of your website. And, of course, that CSS probably applies to many, many pages of your website with different HTML and thus different selectors that match. And not only that, but, like, JavaScript could fire a modal that, in the way that that modal opens, is a class changes to modal open. And then maybe modal open is in that CSS ready to go. It's maybe unused right now, but it's not unused in certain states. You know, it's a very tricky thing to figure out if a CSS selector is actually used or not. So here's this like clever possibility, right? That's like way advanced and whatever. There's this thing called the CSS OM, right? And the CSS OM is the browser has read your CSS style sheet or sheets and created this like master array of all the selectors inside of it. And you can iterate through that array in JavaScript and like, show me all these selectors. I'm going to loop through them. Then do like a query selector all on that selector to see if it has matched anything in there. That's probably what the DevTools is doing. Right, it's being like, I know what the CSS OM is, I know what the actual DOM is, so let me just compare the two and see if there's some selectors in here that don't match anything. Great, but that's only one page of the website, right? So just start collecting that data. Now you have like, okay, when this page loaded, maybe after X random seconds, I run this thing so that, state is possibly in a different scenario. I'll run it and then I'll report back the selectors that are being unused. And then I'll do it again and again and again, maybe across a small sample size of your website or something like that, and collect this data for a long time. And then you'll start figuring out, seeing selectors that are used. Maybe you should report the ones that are used, not the ones that aren't used, because then you can, or maybe both or something, so you can cross-reference this data. And then you'll start to have a smaller and smaller and smaller list of selectors that aren't used, but there'll probably be some on there. Then to be absolutely sure, for a larger percent of the population, or perhaps all of it, attach like a 1 pixel, 1 by 1 pixel, like transparent GIF, like background image in the CSS on that selector, and see, look at your server logs and see if that image has ever been requested. That's named something specific to that selector, just to prove that that selector isn't being used at all, and then you can get rid of it. So that's a lot of work. But it may be something like that that's required for like really big apps that are really complicated and there's a lot going on and a lot of JavaScript and a lot of, you know, account scenarios and who knows what. You may be in a situation where that's the only way to be like really, really sure that there's CSS that you can get rid of. Quite the aside. I thought it was an interesting story to think about.
Interesting. Yeah. But I think it's a fun place when, you know, I think everyone's been through it. You're just like, oh boy, I'm starting to understand this stuff and now I need to fix it. So it's fun. It's hard work, tedious, but, and then you can kind of come up with what makes sense for you. What ID style makes up sense for you? What class structure makes sense for you?
Yep.
Yeah, it's your thing.
Burn it down, Juanita. Build it up. David Schiffer writes in. I think this is yours, Dave.
Oh, this is a question for everyone. Just wanted to see if you guys have any general tips, recommendations for South by Southwest.
I believe it starts today as we record this, and it might not go out till Monday. So it's South by Southwest Interactive. We're in the heat of it. I think, David, you wrote this in last year, and we didn't get to it. Very sorry about that. But it's a quick little opportunity for us to talk about South by, especially because Dave lives in that city.
Yeah, South by is happening right now. A awesome convergence of President Barack Obama is speaking at South By.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He's speaking at South By, and there is also a open carry rally. Yep, at the Capitol. So the whole city is
like we want to drink on the streets, so we're just going to do it. Go ahead and arrest us.
No, we want to carry assault rifles on the streets.
Yeah. I thought it was New Orleans. You can drink margaritas on the street.
That's basically how Austin works during South By. It has New Orleans rules. But so anyway, a lot's happening, and the city's kind of shut down because the mayor even was like, "No one come to work today if you can." Avoid it, like, so everything, like the freeways are empty. It's kind of zombie town because the whole town fills up. Like 30,000 people come to this Southwest Interactive and Film thing. That's a lot of people to just throw into like a kind of six square block area.
And you say there's schools closed? Yeah,
there's like 16
I think that's a little questionable
closed.
For us.
Well, so whenever Obama comes to town,
it's Obama
traffic. Shuts down because we only have two freeways that go north and south. So, we only have two freeways like total. And it's not good enough. Everything sort of shuts down. So it's going to be chaos. But what's neat about the chaos is you can kind of stumble into really neat opportunities. My tips and recommendations would be if you have a badge, not everyone has a badge when they come to South By, but if you have a badge, go see stuff you normally wouldn't see, just kind of random things you're interested in. I went to like this
point being if you paid for a badge or you were given a badge for some reason, I mean, they're expensive, so you might as well take advantage of it.
Yeah, there's good things to learn. There's kind of like future of tech talks, you know, kind of like what's happening. Or I went to this the state of Japanese mobile gaming or something once, and it was just neat to get like a different perspective on what's kind of happening.
There'll almost certainly be stuff to see that you're not going to see anywhere else, or that is outside of your circle because the circles are so big and so many of them. I saw a talk about gaming one time too that was very memorable to me. At South By, so there's stuff to see. I mean, you're gonna win some and you're gonna lose some. And if you're like a not that into crowds kind of introverted person, I can imagine it being kind of nightmare-y to you too. But you know, I don't know. I remember like reading posts about South By in years past that were like all these tips, like always be charging. There, you know, you're an adult and you have electronic devices. Those devices should have electricity in them in order to provide their main function. So consider that when walking around. Are you hungry? You should consider eating food because that will regain your energy levels and thus you'll be able to go to South By sessions more because it's
thirsty,
like
thirsty. Have a beverage.
It's like, are you, we're all adult, you know, you're in a city where there's a conference going on. Maybe just use your adulting skills to traverse the city. I don't know.
See a stranger?
Yeah.
Decide whether to talk to
them. Not such a weird thing that you can't, that you need a special blog article to live your life at South by Southwest.
I think it's just have a good attitude, be open to what getting into, I don't know, conversations with strangers. That's sort of the best thing. And if that's not your strong suit, then that's fine too. I mean, just hang out with people you know. I mean, yeah, I The Ginger Man is a really nice bar downtown. It's kind of the tech hub of Austin. People end up there and just, yeah, you'll end up there.
Folks at the Ginger Man for sure. Yeah.
And you don't have to drink or anything. So it's not even that, but I'm sure socializing helps, you know. So there's a lot of opportunities. So just to talk to people. I mean, I've met tons of people coming through South by. So, and every year there's also a dribble party, the South Austin Dribble, ATX Dribble community, which is really awesome, headed up by Sophie Shepherd, put on a pretty baller party. And it's great.
Pretty good. Pretty good. Dan Bao writes in, I'm looking for an HTML5/CSS3/other buzzwords. No, just kidding. But a grid-like boilerplate that uses M's instead of pixels. Do any exist? Can you recommend one? Dan is looking for a thing. I wonder if he's looking for, it seems like a little slightly weird of a requirement. Like I'm looking for a grid and I just want to use the grid that's provided to me. But one of my requirements is that it uses whatever CSS unit that I decide is better than another CSS unit. And I demand that it's in M's and not pixels. It seems weird. You think if you wanted a grid, you'd want percentages?
Yeah. I mean,
how do you even write a grid in M's?
Well, I think you mostly do like M breakpoints, like at media min width 40M or something, which is kind of cool for like content based kind of structure. But an M is always, to the browser at least, is always 16. So. 40 M's is always going
to be. Change your HTML pixel size, it doesn't change where your breakpoint is. It just doesn't work like that.
Yeah, it just doesn't work like that. So it's sort of just an abstraction, but it's kind of also based on type. So, like, I mean, you know, I sort of like the M breakpoints just because you can kind of say, like, at this, this is for content, like that when this content gets this big, do this thing. But it's really just an abstraction for pixels. Type though is something I would be picky about. Like I want M based typography or REM based, basically just cause I'm working with a framework right now that specified all the type sizes and line heights and pixels. And it's just like, oh, really? Like, so if I increase the font size, I also have to increase the line height? Like, you didn't plan that out for me? Or, you know, and one thing that people, I'm seeing a lot of minimalist grid framework or minimalist frameworks that I just saw one today. And they're like, oh, we made typography. And it's just like 7 different font sizes, like 6 headings and 1 body copy font size. But they don't like respond. So on mobile, you'll have a 50 pixel tall H1, and it's just like, well, that's useless. No one wants that on a mobile site. Yeah. So like, there's no responsive typography. It's just like I chose 6 sizes, you know, and that bothers me so much. So anyway, I guess I understand the kind of need for M's, but I'm not sure there's like a really good one off the top of my head. I think this is a roll your own, or you know, like pop the download Bootstrap and pop out the parts you don't like.
That's true. Or Foundation. Right. I mean, I used that somewhat recently on a mini project, and I was like, oh, Foundation is really nice. I like how it's like, it's really friendly to your raw markup. If you just like semantically describe something in HTML5, like pretty well, and then just like drop Foundation on a page, it's like, oh, yeah, that looks good. you know, it's less, little less class driven, although it has plenty of that as well. Today's episode of Shop Talk Show is sponsored in part by Rollbar. Rollbar.com. It's error tracking for your web app. You absolutely have to have error tracking installed in your web app. It's pretty darn vital. Rollbar is error tracking for your web app. Put errors in their place, they say. Detect, diagnose, and defeat errors. So let's say you're like running some Rails app or whatever. It doesn't have to be Rails because they track all kinds of languages and frameworks and stuff with Rollbar. But let's say it's a Rails app and, like, you know, you have thousands of users and one of them, like, does something in your web application and it just totally has an error and they're not able to do it. It throws up an error page visually for them, really abrupt experience. That user's like having a bad time. How do you know that? Did you just wait for them to email you? Did you like write something in your app to like email yourself when errors are thrown or whatever? Those are like pretty lowbrow solutions. The correct solution is to have an app, Rollbar, installed to track them. It's going to show you like how often they're occurring. What are the important ones? You can get notified, set up different notification preferences so that you learn when these things happen, because they can be really bad news. Like, oh, you pushed code and it's triggering an error somewhere. Something needs to be tracking these things. You can invite your whole team there and like comment on the things that are going on. You can resolve bugs when you know that they've been dealt with. It's so nice to have error tracking in place in a system so you can keep that place clean. It's like your business as a developer to keep your error tracking dashboard clean, and that's what, you know, the dashboard part of it is Rollbar, which is great. Dealing with errors kind of sucks. It's nice to have, you know, kind of a place to do it. It works with all major languages and frameworks. You can start tracking production errors and deployments in 8 minutes, they say. You know, Heroku uses it, Twilio uses it, Kayak, Instacart, Zendesk, Twitch. Huge customers on Rollbar. It is pretty dang awesome. This is the URL, rollbar.com/shoptalkshow. You get the bootstrap plan free for 90 days. That's 300,000 errors tracked for free. Very good discount for ShopTalkShow listeners. rollbar.com/shoptalkshow. So, okay, let's see. Rebecca Sprague wrote in. It's kind of a while
this
ago.
This was an audio, right?
It was, and then it was on recordmp3.com, which gone away. So now we recommend a different one. So if you go to shoptalkshow.com/ask or that store to buy a shirt and then go to ask.
ABC.
Yep. It recommends a different recording thing that works great. And it's a local Austin company, I think. But the topic of the question, right, was online IDEs versus local development. So something where you're writing code like in a web browser, it's all clouded up. I saw this sticker. This is the best sticker ever that said, there is no cloud. It's just somebody else's computer.
Ooh, wow. Joke. What does Fox Mulder think of that?
Or versus local development, meaning working locally with, you know, your command line Git and Sublime or Atom or Vim or something, but like locally, you know, using software that's running natively on your operating system on the computer that's sitting right in front of you, you know?
Yeah, this is a really interesting, my brain gets going. So I use Atom, right? Atom is an Electron app. So it's HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, you know, downloaded to my computer that runs, right? An online IDE is HTML, CSS, and JavaScript that is running in a web browser. Why do I not trust the online IDE to do anything for me?
Like, you trust the web for lots of other stuff.
I do for everything, like my accounting, my whatever, like mission critical
document editing,
paying bills. Document editing. Yeah, I don't even think twice about like a Word doc or a spreadsheet in the cloud. You know, but for some reason when it's code, I'm like, well, no, I gotta get that on my local host.
And comes from a weird place. It comes from a weird place. I tell you, because I feel similarly about some stuff. And now, someone who, you know, is an owner and operator of CodePen, which is not really an online IDE, but we're kind of moving more and more towards that every day. Of course, I have some vested interest in getting people past these humps and stuff, myself included. And I think we have some good ideas for that. But there's both irrational reasons, like you and I both have, like it's not as safe, it's not as performant or stuff,
stable.
Mixed with real ones, which are like, I don't know, it can't, in some cases, it is not as performant. And there is the possibility that the website for some online IDE goes down and then mission critical things aren't being able to be done. So there's ways around all of that. So it comes from a weird place in that some of the things are very rational and some of the things are very irrational. And but I do think that they're not used as much as they could or should be. And I think they're not as good as they could or should be. And it's just – and I, just to flop on some more big thinking to this pile of garbage, they are the future.
Whoa.
Ooh.
Well, so I – you know, you mentioned CodePen. Big fan of CodePen over here at the Shop Talk Show. I probably spend 20 hours a week in CodePen, making CodePens, like building out – prototypes and building out kind of style guides and pages and templates just to kind of like see how it's all going to work in the browser before I go throw it onto the kind of production server. And I don't fear doing that at all. You know, I do that all the time. And I enjoy it, and it like works better for me because like, I don't have to set up a compiler locally. I don't have to set up a, you know, HAML preprocessor. It all works. I'm writing JavaScript and it's immediately validated or invalidated in the console. That's kind of awesome when working on the web or specifically in CodePen, but for whatever reason, I'm still hung up about IDEs in the cloud. I did have the experience like this week, I was trying to write a picture element and my Wi-Fi has been a little flaky or whatever. I was writing it and I was like, I know the picture syntax, but this is not working. And I was just very like angry, you know, like where you're like very mad because it's not working, but something's happening. And it turned out like my computer quit pinging CodePen and coming back with a new copy of the web page. So I was writing my changes, but they were never coming back to me. So anyway, that was like my thing. But I've experienced the pitfalls with being online only, and I don't like those, but I more and more I'm doing it. So I don't know, Chris.
Yeah. I said what I had to say, kind of. I think it's the fear of them is weird. I do think it's the future. I do think they have to get a lot better. I think there's smart things that can be done. I think a really good one would be like an API to Git, essentially, and that like it wouldn't be down, or it could be like I'm going to work on this all, but I need to hop on to edit it, so I'm going to use what the web is good at. So like if I'm on my friend's computer, I can hop on and use the IDE that's in the web and continue my development like nothing ever happened for the most part, and still like commit and stuff, but then other times use other IDEs or whatever. And maybe the online ED has more benefits too. Like there's some social features or there's some online rendering of what you're looking at that the web is good at, that kind of thing.
Well, and it's the future, but it's kind of also the past, isn't it? Like if you SSH into a server and use Vim, I mean, you're using an online IDE.
Oh, that's some stuff, man.
Right?
I didn't even think about that. Some deep stuff.
Wow. Deep thoughts with Shop Talk. Next question.
You were just begging for a soundbite here.
I know. Next question.
Okay.
Side note, you just did it today. Spectre Gadget was my
son. I'll get you next time, Gadget.
Wow, that was really good. My son has been watching Spectre Gadget. He calls him Uncle Gadget, which is awesome. So Otis wants to watch Dr. Uncle Claw. Gadget, and it's been really great for my Welch Chief impression. Welch Chief. All right.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Was it Penny?
Maxwell Smart, actually, Penny and Brain. Yeah, Penny was the
hero. She actually solved the problems.
Yep. All right, Jason Witt writes in, this has something to do with the HTML5 section tag. Jun, the W3C says it's a generic element tag, but not a generic wrapper, meaning you shouldn't style it. Why? What would happen if I do? Will the W3C kill a puppy every time I add a background color to a section? The alternative would be to add a div inside the section and style that. That seems redundant to me. Also, what is a section? That seems to be the most confusing part. No one seems to be able to decide on that. If you use it semantically, it makes sense, but I've seen people put section tag right after the body tag and wrap the whole page in a section. That doesn't seem right to me. So can you explain when it's appropriate to use a section tag?
I can tell you that I would not feel guilty for a second by applying a background color to a section tag. That's for sure. Yeah.
Let's I think we can all agree. I would like to just say, Jason, no one knows what it means. No one in the history of HTML understands section, article, and div in the difference. So I wouldn't worry about it. Not even, yeah.
It's closest to a div, I would feel like. Yeah, I literally don't understand. I don't even think, Dave's both joking and not joking. I would think that there's somebody out there who purports to know what it does. I think the most interesting person to talk to would be somebody who's, does it, like an accessibility person, does it have any implied ARIA roles, a section? Does it do anything at all different than a div does in any particular screen reading device? I don't know that it does.
I've heard Steve Faulkner say, like, the article does have kind of semantic meaning and have, like,
article makes more sense to me. That's like, this is a chunk of stuff that would be in an RSS entry.
Yeah, this is a article. You click to see an article. This is an article. I think that makes sense. He did recently mention her blog about that. Like, you know, if you had like a little card UI, like a list of articles, you know, like on a homepage or something, those are not article tags. Those are just little stubs. Those aren't real articles. So it's very interesting. But in terms of like section versus div, no one knows. Jeremy Keith would probably be like, oh, I'm British, I know. And he's like, nope. Sorry, Jeremy, you don't know. No one knows. It's impossible to know. I understand section inside an article, like almost like chapters, like section one, article. This is my article, section one. That makes sense to me. But I don't know. I use section all the time for wrong. I use it like layers of the sandwich on my website. So section one of my homepage, section class, big hero image.
Yeah, I can see it because it's not quite right. Like main makes sense, right? But there is a main. It's like this is the area that like isn't the header or the footer or the sidebar. I think that kind of feels okay to me. And articles make sense to me. But yeah, sections is a little tough. But maybe sections of an article, maybe the other way around, where you know, a section wraps a bunch of articles and then below all those articles is like about the author of all these articles section. So there's like four articles and then there's this other part of the site, which makes sense to me as a section that would be, you know, different. So it would feel good to me to wrap that in a section because I'm like, this is a section that's different than this other section, which I guess is like a layer of the sandwich kind of thing like you were talking about. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess let's just be like, I don't know, maybe there's some cow paths to be paved here if a lot of people start using it in the same way. Who knows? I just think of it as a fancy div, I guess. I don't know.
No one knows what it means. No.
Media Temple is one of the sponsors for today's Shop Talk Show. Oh, thank you, Media Temple, for all that you have done for me and us. ShopTalkShow.com is on Media Temple. We want to tell you about a specific kind of Media Temple hosting, and it is their most affordable plan. It starts at $30 a month. It's called Grid. It's shared hosting, but it's wicked powerful shared hosting. For one thing, these days, it's all SSD hard drives. I can tell you, I actually just upgraded to SSD hard drives on some of my other servers that are also on Media Temple, and you can feel the difference. SSD storage is awesome, but that's just one of the things. You get 30-day backups automatically on it. You get one-click manage apps. You like WordPress. You like other applications. You can just be like, boop, now it's installed on that domain. You're automatically on a CDN when you're on Grid. The file manager is super crazy. This is actually highly impressive, I think. So you just like log into their account center, which is like an impressive piece of UI to begin with to manage on how all your server works and stuff. But now like you can literally manage your files and like code in the account center if you wanted to. Like, oh shoot, I need to hop on my server to do something. You don't have to be like, shoot, I'm like not at home in my regular development environment or whatever, you can use the web to do it. You're like at ac.mediatemple.net and you're like jumping through like it's an FTP client, and like, you know, even better than that, you like click on the file and it opens up in an editor that's syntax highlighted that I can change file permissions on and all that stuff, and just like edit code and save it quick and it's automatically saved to your server. Their file manager is kind of awesome. So that's comes with the grid automatically. That is worth it right there. There's just a lot to like about the grid. It's very affordable hosting. You can host a ton of sites on there, on those SSD drives and everything for $30 a month. Absolutely love it. Check out mediatemple.net, and thanks for their sponsorship of this show. Jason Founce writes in, I would like to know if you can style the HTML5 input range slider to have one color for the portion that indicates the current value, the used portion of the slider, and another color for the position indicating that the value will increase. Hard to explain that one, but I think it makes sense. I think it is easy to explain. Think of like a thermometer. That would be like a vertical input range, and, you know, it goes from 0 to 150 or something, and you put it in your mouth and it says 98.6. Below that point, you can tell it's 98.6 because the bottom part of it is red and the top part of it is empty still, or white or whatever. Can you do that with the range slider? I can tell you that you can, and I can tell you if you have any questions whatsoever about what you can and can't style with the HTML5 input range, like literally input type equals range. There's this collection on CodePen from Anna Tudor called My Sliders that has like 100 or something or more of them. And they're not like divs and spans and jQuery UI replicating an input. They are input type equals range, and as best as possible, cross-browser implemented to style up that slider. And there's totally ones just like you described. There's like where there's like one color on the left and another color on the right, and they change when you drag that little slider guy back and forth. You can do so much with the HTML5 input range. It's kind of amazing what you can do.
These are amazing. It's like everything you'd ever want. A cornucopia of sliders.
They're from like, she would go to Dribbble and find some crazy designer, design something up really, really weird and unique, and then just replicate that Dribbble, or replicate like a stock art slider or Google image search something. She would just find examples of what a slider could be like.
That's great.
I'm usually like Captain Leave the Styling Alone on native inputs, but you know, that's a talk for another day. Yeah.
We did it recently, and it was actually easier than I maybe anticipated. I thought, you know, styling inputs and native inputs is always bad. Like, you still can't style a select because of Firefox. I think it's usually hard, but range actually works out pretty well. It does take like 20 kind of pseudo properties for all the browsers to do it right, but it's actually pretty good. So pretty stylable, I would say.
Yeah. Well, check out the collection. We'll put it in the show notes for sure. I think as we wrap up here, we should say that, you know, it's coming on March here, the spring. The spring's always time for new things. Sprung. New things like maybe a new job. There's lots of great jobs on the Shop Talk Show job board. One of them that we'd like to highlight for you at Plaudit Design here in the Midwest. Come live with me up in the Midwest here in St. Paul, Minnesota. A really lovely place. They got some new trains there. It's a really nice city. I think everybody should check it out. Possibly you should pick up and move there, because this Plaudit Design job is for a front-end web developer. They're searching for a developer who loves creating websites with highly polished user experiences. And it's like, so converting designs into websites, which is one of my superpowers. I wish I could do it all day long. I don't get a chance to do it as much as I want to, but give me a design, I can rock that stuff in HTML and CSS. It's the one thing on earth that I'm straight up good at. They want about 3 years of experience, so kind of mid-grade thing. You could, I'm sure most of you out there qualify for that. They just want you good at HTML and CSS, in an understanding of browsers and front front-end development. It's like a bonus if you know some pre-processing language. It's a bonus if you know some version control languages. It's a bonus if you know a build tool system. So it's all that stuff. So some of you out there are very qualified for this. Sure, it's just a good-looking job. It's got all the normal benefits of a good job, and you get to do it at Plaudit Design in St. Paul, Minnesota. What do you think, Dave? You got some wrap-up stuff?
Yeah, we should probably wrap it up. Thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of Shop Talk Show. If you enjoyed it, star heart, favorite it, rate it 5 stars in your podcatcher of choice. It's that easy. That's how people find out about the show. You can also follow us on Twitter for tens of tweets a month. And you can tell people on Twitter about how you listen to the show. Oh, that would be so great. Thank you very much. If you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs. Get a brand new job. Lots of good companies, including Plaudit there, want to hire you. So, all right. Well, I think that's all we got, Chris. We breaking the fourth wall here. We tried to record this about 100 times, so it's amazing that we got this done. So. Let's wrap it up before it crashes.
Yeah. ShopTalkShow.com. I rented a cabin in the woods and just watched the stream, and a beaver was making love to his beaver wife.
All right.
That's the power of blogging, huh?
Here's my hot take. You are terrible, and you do awful, terrible things, and I hacked your life.
That's genius.
Ooh, yeah, brother.
Don't even go there.
I stayed up for about 2 hours figuring out how I fight an alligator in real life.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't want him, like, chafing all up on you.
5 hot dogs got married.
That's a lot of words. Grabowski.
Let me just mouth blog it for you. I've developed a process called liquid wood. I think it's a very thick stack.
Don't even go there.
I told Siri to call me Batman one time.
No, thanks. I prefer my sex to remain awkward.
All right.
Maybe RSS should grow up and scrape my site automatically.
Yeah, let me flash back to 1980 when that was cool. Mouse.
Oh, and it's colored?
Boom. Nuked it.
You're a poo-poo head. Get on with your life.
Can we start calling these Frankenpilers?
Yon, man.
Ain't never heard of that. Hashtag, geez, Chris.
Oh.
Yeah, I can control a satellite with JavaScript. Live Googling here on the Shop Talk Show. Five hot dogs got married.
That's genius.
Let me just mouth blog it for you.
You're a poo-poo head.
Had a couple of beers. This is how I feel.
Get on with your life.
I am not afraid.
Oh, there is something about those nice round numbers.
I don't have the soundboard.